Welcome to the Art of Succession podcast with Barrett Young. Join us as we explore the strategies, stories, and insights that shape the journey of leadership transitions and business success, no matter where you find yourself along the journey. This is the podcast where you'll find the tools to make it happen.
I would get involved in other aspects like sales and whatnot, but nowhere near to the extent that I am now. You know, retirement was something that he never thought he would do. We'll figure it out when. Biggest lesson I learned was how to just put one foot in front of the other.
My name is Barrett Young, and this is the Art of Succession podcast. My guest today is Garrett Nowak, president of Lamothermic, a manufacturing company in New York. Garrett, welcome to the Art of Succession.
Thanks for having me, Barrett.
So we've got a story that we're going to unpack today. Your father was the president of the company, and then he unfortunately passed. What year did he pass in?
2022.
Okay, so he passed just under 3 years ago, and you found yourself at the age of 25 taking over this manufacturing company. Before we get into that, what's interested you in telling this story today on the Art of Succession?
Hopefully reaching the one person out there that's in my shoes and can look back and say, you can do it too.
All right. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for being open and candid in this interview. So did your father start the company? Just tell me a little bit about the origin of the company quite briefly.
Sure. So we make investment castings for commercial, industrial use, anything you can think of. Dad founded the company back in 1976. He was working for the company that built our induction furnaces that we used to melt the metal. And he was working for that company and was getting a little stagnant in that role. He said, I can do this whole casting thing too, and went and built the company. So he started in my grandparents' basement and got a location here in Cold Springs down the road. A couple of years later, moved to Pauling, and now we're in Brewster. We've been here for probably about 30-something years. So
okay,
kind of how it started.
So you grew up in this business then?
I did. I've been running around this place since I was, you know, yay tall with my scooter and my old Sony Walkman.
Okay. Did Dad have any co-founders or anything? Or
He started the business with a college roommate, and they saw different visions for the business, so they split ways. My uncle joined the business, so my father and my uncle really kind of built it from the ground up.
Okay, gotcha. Is your uncle still in the business, or
as of last year? He is retired, and it's me.
Okay. All right. So your father then wasn't 100% owner at the time of his passing.
Correct.
But he was the acting president and running the company.
That's correct.
Okay. Had you been involved in the business? Tell me a little bit about your involvement up until that point.
Sure. Like I said, I've been running around these walls since I was a little kid, and when I became 16, I started working in the business, you know, officially rather than just helping my dad push the buttons as a kid. And I would come here after school when I was in high school and work a couple hours here, a couple hours there. I'd come in on the weekends. Then I went to college. I graduated from CU New Paltz with a degree in mechanical engineering. And during my college breaks, I would come and work kind of like a engineering intern, if you will. When I graduated college, I got hired full-time as a manufacturing engineer here and spent probably, let's see if I do the math correctly, about 4 years doing that up until Dad's passing.
Okay. So from teenage years, it was your purpose to come into the family business then?
Yeah, it was kind of my intent. I was really big into computers when I was younger, and I went off to school thinking, I'm going to be a computer engineer. I don't need this dirty manufacturing stuff. And then one day, I had a professor that gave a presentation in mechanical engineering, and I just sat there. And at the end of the presentation, I said, in the world am I doing? This is so cool. And had I do it all again, I'd probably have gone to school for manufacturing engineering rather than mechanical engineering. But yeah, that's what kind of flipped the switch. And one day I just kind of made the decision, I think this is what I want to do. And it still is what I want to do.
Okay. Interesting. And give me just a ballpark on the size of the company, like number of employees, volume, or anything like that that you're comfortable sharing.
Sure. We've been as high as probably about 130 people. Currently, we're about 53. When I took over the business, we were at about 70 and change. 2024 was a slower year than I had liked. But we reside in a 50,000 square foot facility. We've run as much as three shifts, almost 24/7 for the most part. We're about $12 million.
Okay. Do you have like large supply or large customers, or is it more small order? Like, what's that look like?
A little bit of everything. We have some very large customers that make things that you and I use every single day. You see them all around the world in terms of automotive. And I got the guy down the road that's rebuilding, you know, a barn and wants some door handles made. So everything in between.
Okay. So I'm trying to get some context here of what you're stepping into at 25 years old.
So what I stepped into, I'd say, you know, we haven't grown all that much, about a $12 million company. We had about 70 and change employees running three shifts.
Pretty stable, other than like supply chain issues and COVID and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that.
So that's kind of what I stepped into.
I was going to say, that's about the timeline. It sounds
Yeah. That was a painful time in terms of the supply chain and COVID and everything. Yeah. It's a well-established business when I got into it. I definitely saw room for improvement, and there were some red flags in my mind. But when Dad passed, it was kind of my first priority to take care of some of those things. When I stepped in, I was kind of like drinking out of a fire hose. I had gone to school for engineering. I think what I'd say is proficient in doing some of the engineering things here. Had no formal training in how to run a business or any of the legal or HR matters or anything like that.
Yeah. Prior to his passing, what was your role? Were you a department head or shadowing him? What did that look like?
Just a manufacturing engineer. I was developing processes for the products that we manufacture, from, you know, soup to nuts. But that was really kind of it. My niche was in engineering, and I would get involved in other aspects like sales and whatnot, but nowhere near to the extent that I am now. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of just dipping my toes in the water. Dad didn't really have a succession plan, which was kind of the hardest part for me.
Gotcha. But prior to that, you were, how many mechanical engineers would you guys have on staff? I mean, one of 10, one of three?
What's about that like? One of three, one of four.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. So you're kind of in the middle, even though you're, you know, the owner's kid and everything like that, and have been running around doing this for 6 years. But
yeah.
So you don't have like department or budget responsibility or anything at this point?
No, at that point, no, not at all.
Okay. And your father passed of cancer, correct?
Yeah, he lost his third battle, unfortunately.
Okay. I'm sorry. How many years had he been fighting this?
So he got re-diagnosed with cancer in 2020. So on top of COVID, which was a nightmare in itself, that's when he was diagnosed. So we spent, you know, two and change years battling what everyone else was battling in terms of the world of COVID and whatnot. And we were battling, you know, Dad being sick, COVID aside, immunocompromised, a difficult way of living, if you will. It was a very emotional time in my life. And, you know, when I think about it, it's still emotional. But it was something that, you know, you do the best you can.
Prior to that, his first two bouts with cancer, I mean, were you a child when he first was diagnosed?
Yeah, I was a child. I don't remember what age I was, but I was too young to understand. And it was difficult on my mom. And my brother was a little bit too young to understand, but my sister understood. By the time I understood what had happened, it had happened. And, you know, he was in remission for, you know, 18 years or something like that. I don't know the exact amount.
Okay. I mean, so almost your entire life then.
Yeah. Yeah. And his second battle was when I was in college. So we had thought that kind of cleared up, and then it progressed into a different, it became a different type of cancer. So it was, you know, we're going down the road this way, and it said, well, we're going that way type of deal.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. I know it's touchy and sort of emotional. And
sure.
So you came in, it sounds like, right before the third bout with cancer started again.
Yep.
And you said he passed without a succession plan. So I mean, succession planning for any business owner is hard enough already. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to admit that there's an end out there. I imagine fighting cancer, you just have to stay optimistic and not give in to that. Is that why he wasn't prioritizing succession planning, do you think?
Can't really tell you what was going through his head other than it wasn't on the top of his to-do list. My dad, like me, loved what he did. And, you know, retirement was something that he never thought he would do. You know, we'll figure it out when. We'll figure it out when. Well, when came and gone. So it wasn't something that he was really thinking about.
Okay. How much planning had he done? I mean, had he put anything in place? Is it like a 20-year-old will or?
Yeah, we had he had a will. But it really didn't do much in terms of me figuring out anything with the business. There was a, outdated drafts of things, but nothing too crazy.
Gotcha. So if we can we talk about this for a little bit? Because a lot of people think, you know, wills and estates and trusts and things like that. And they think, oh, if I just write it down in that, it's going to take care of the family. But business owners need an operations plan. I mean, there's...
Oh, that's the majority of it, in my opinion. Doesn't matter what you put down on paper. If you don't have a plan to execute, who cares what's on paper? You won't be able to do it.
Yeah, especially if you don't have a family member involved in the business or signing power over checks and bank accounts and things like that. It could take months to try to unfreeze assets or get in contact with a trustee of any estate plan. But you've got payroll coming up this next week, so
yeah.
Lessons learned that you want to share or just enforce from that.
The biggest lesson I learned was how to just put one foot in front of the other every day. For quite a long time until I was starting to feel confident in what I was doing. We have had and still have a wonderful team that helped me get through it to a point where I felt a little bit more stable. But the biggest lesson I take away, like I said, is just learning how to keep going. A good therapist and some good hard work goes a long way, and organization. Learn as much as you can every day. because you don't want to be rushed to do it all in a short period of time like I did.
I mean, if you don't want to, please stop me.
Sure.
But talk me through that first month after he passed. I mean, you have to wake up, you have to go in, and then you also have employees who've probably been working with him for 15, 20, maybe even 40 years at this point. And you have to get them to show up and do the work. I mean, was there grief counselor involved for the team, or just a lot of checking in? And
a lot of checking in. Yeah, I'll tell you as much as I can from the beginning. I remember the morning that Dad had passed, and we got a call from the doctor saying, you know, this was the end. And that for me is where it started. I obviously took the day off, and we waited for the end to come. It was kind of slow and painful. I took about 2 days off to grieve, and I came into the office, and that's when I said, all right, it's time to keep going. Everyone here was holding the weight for me. And my uncle was here, and he said, all right, Garrett, it's time to go. You know, and I said, all right, let's do it. And the next, you know, several weeks, it was, all right, well, Dad has an empty desk here. What do I do with that? I spent a lot of time cleaning the desk. I was, Dad has all these files. What are these? Went through those. Yeah, it was checking in with myself, checking in with the people that work for me. You know, it was a difficult time for everyone, but everyone kind of stood on each other's shoulders. It was, you know, this is what Dad would have wanted. Dad would have wanted us to do it this way. And while, you know, that's kind of hard in today's way of thinking, at the, you know, immediate month after his passing was, you know, let's make Dad proud, and let's keep, you know, doing the things I need to get done. And it was probably a week or two after that, I said, all right, I need to learn what to do. Like I said, we have a team that kept me going. But a lot of the growing pains were me figuring it out. And, you know, kind of by the way it goes, making it my own style. I didn't have a whole lot of time working with my dad in the capacity of what it means to run a business. I had time with him doing engineering related projects, but I have no idea what my dad would have said on half the things I needed to ask him about running a business.
So who were you able to lean on during this time? Had your uncle had any experience running the business too, or
advisor,
CPA, anything, attorney?
Yeah, I had a good amount of people. Our general manager that was running the plant for, you know, about 30 years or something at the time, really has a good grasp on the way the business runs. And my uncle was here, you know, doing the same. Most of the key managers I have are the ones that held their own and helped me create my own, in a way. You know, my first goal, probably in the six months after my dad's passing, for me mentally was, you know, stabilize. What do I need to do to stabilize? Because I felt very unstable at the time. You know, I didn't know what I didn't know. And it was a rapid exercise and learning of learning the things I don't know.
I mean, a company of 70, you've got to have systems and HR and accounting department, sales, different kinds of things. Am I correct in that? And so those things had been set up in advance and kind of just leaned on those?
Some of the things, some of them not so much. You know, we don't have an accounting department. We have somebody that does accounting that interfaces with our accountants, and you know, same thing with HR. Our sales team was one at the time, so like we didn't have these big, you know, giant teams of people, but I had people.
And so they just kept doing, while you're taking these 6 months to stabilize, they're just kind of business as usual, trying to keep things going the way that they had been going.
Yeah, I'd say that's a good description of it. It was, you know, we do have systems and processes that kept things going. Yeah, like you said, you know, business as usual. But from a leadership of the business standpoint, that's really where I needed to fill the gaps. Because anyone knows, you know, how to follow the directions and push the buttons. But, you know, in terms of where is the company going from here is a much larger question.
Yeah. What happened? You know, when do we decide the directions need to change?
Yeah, exactly. And for me, that was the biggest thing, understanding the, you know, prior to this, I had no real understanding of the financial situation of the company. And it was all a black box to me. And it was like, all right, time to open the box and dig in and see what's there. All that was kind of done as needed to. And, you know, that kind of led me into the next phase of after I stabilize, you know, what do I learn that will help me grow? And then how do I grow and develop? And now I find myself in this growing and developing stage. You know, here we are almost, 3 years later. It's a totally different picture.
Okay. I definitely want to get into what you've done with the company and made it your own. I don't want you to feel like you're dishonoring your dad, but what kind of messes did you find? What kind of messes do people leave because they always think I can fix this tomorrow?
A lot of things that my dad didn't know about. You know, he was really great engineer. Not so much a person that wanted to really drive a company in a direction. You know, he didn't find that part as fun, as exciting as I do, which is, you know, totally fine. I wouldn't say there was anything messy. If I had to get close to the term messy, it probably would have been just the way that there wasn't a blueprint on how to keep going. There was no, if dad passed, then do this type of thing. There was no plan. I think that was the part that bothered me. It was, I knew things that had to get done, but not from, you know, dad's planning.
The size that you guys were at and number of employees and just the size of your customers and everything, was there any fear that revenue was going to dry up? I don't know if your dad was involved in that relationship side of sales or not.
Oh yeah, he was. And I was fearful of that, but no one else was. I'm proud to say we didn't lose a single customer over the fact that dad wasn't around. We didn't lose a single employee due to the fact that dad wasn't around. So the brand of the business remained, even though I had concerns about it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Anything else around this that I haven't asked or haven't pried into?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay. All right. So the first 6 months, I assume within the first 6 months to stabilize the company, did that go faster than expected? Did it go slower than expected?
It went faster than expected. Stabilize the company maybe isn't the right term, because it's not like we were, you know, about to crash or anything. It was more so, we're kind of on autopilot, and there's a time and a place for when you get down, you know, off of autopilot, and, you know, who's going to fly the plane type of thing. Mm-hmm. We were moving forward in an okay direction. Stabilize for me was understand the systems and what are the next steps going to look like. And yeah, I was able to do that. A lot of hours, a lot of soul searching, quite frankly. Now it was, well, what do I want to do? It was no longer, well, what did Dad and I want to do? It was, what did I want to do?
Walk me through that first decision to change something. What's going on in your mind emotionally? You know, is this the right thing? Is it too fast? Is it too soon? Talk me through that first change.
I have a bunch of them. And I still have some today. And I probably always will. But probably one of the biggest things is in the summer of 23, we gutted a part of our production facility to revamp it. The induction melter that we use to melt our metal was, you know, had seen better days, and we decided that we were going to buy and implement a new one. And the company that we bought the melter from is where Dad started off his career before he decided to create this business. And people that I talked to during the sale remembered Dad. And we took at least 10 days and gutted out our operation, where if we tried to turn the lights back on, it wouldn't have worked. We redid everything. We broke up floors. We replumbed this and redid the electrical lines on that. And we spent hours and hours. And all I could think was, am I going to be able to, you know, turn this thing on at the end of the day and get back to where we were? And it was probably the most stressful day of my career when we went to turn the machine on and it didn't work. And I said, I've spent 10 days, and I was part of the crew too. I was up on the boom lift and everything. And I'm like, we spent 10 days and this thing's not turning on, and everyone has to come to work 2 days from now, and I'm supposed to pay people this week. What do you mean it doesn't work? And the poor guy commissioning the unit heard it from me, but it was a false alarm. They put the wrong sticker on the machine and had the wrong settings in. But I was very scared. You know, it was, I made the decision that we're going to revamp this thing and we're going to spend 10 days shut down, making this thing better. And all I can remember is standing there watching my contractor jackhammer the floor apart. And I'm sitting there, all right, well, there goes that part. There goes that part. And once he started breaking up the deck, I was like, should I have done this? Can I manage to turn the operation back on? We did it, and it worked great. Something that we're all really proud of. But boy, was I scared. Boy, was I unsure if I was going to be in business a week later after some of the headaches I had that week.
I mean, given that was your dad's experience, I imagine he was that person running the entire show in the past when you guys had installed these, right?
Yeah. And here I am calling the shots.
Yeah. All that knowledge that was stored in his head. He knew what to do, kind of thing.
Yep. Yep. He did.
Just for context, because I am an accountant and I love this kind of stuff. What's the dollar amount of the size of piece of equipment and just complete install that we're talking about here?
Probably when it's all said and done, you know, like labor and materials and contracting in the unit, probably $500,000 is too low, but 3/4 is probably too much. Okay. Somewhere in that range. Not exactly pocket change for my type of business.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have how many of these operating?
One.
Usually? Oh, just this is it.
We had two. One was broken and one was on the fritz. And I mean, you know, when we're down for a day and that machine turns off and it's not melting metal, you know, I'm losing revenue at tremendous speed. And I just decided, you know, if I can go 3 days without this running, it would, you know, pay for the machine. And eventually it would break and I didn't have somebody to fix it and I'd have to call a technician. And the dollars started adding up really quick. And I said, we need to do something different here. So.
All right. After you identified the problem, was it another day of refiguring everything, or was it?
Oh yeah, it was about a day to get things back up and running, but it was scary. Probably this one of the scariest days of my career. I started kind of going through my head, or you know, what do I need to do to make sure people have jobs, you know, in a couple of days from now, and that they're going to stay on the payroll, things like that. But at the end of the day, it worked really well. I mean, it was a long project in the planning. We probably spent 8 months planning it. A lot of hard work and commitment from everyone. And I'm so glad we did it. It worked great. Just, boy, was I terrified in the moment.
So since then, that first big project, I mean, what kind of direction have you chosen since now you're no longer just keeping going in the same direction? You mentioned you're down about a third of your workforce. Is it shifting your business model or anything like that?
The biggest thing that we saw was during COVID, everyone would buy a lot of product from us. And the supply chains were so disrupted that they said, oh, I better go buy more. So, and that pushed our lead times out, which made somebody else say, oh, that takes a long time to get my product up. Better buy more. So people bought and bought and bought, kind of like toilet paper. I mean, you go through castings a lot slower than you do toilet paper, though, right? So we kind of saw the flip side of people having too much inventory on their shelves. And that's kind of what we saw in late 23 through 2024. So that was kind of our reduce in headcount. We're on our way back up now. We're actively hiring people, and I see nothing but some really great things for 25 and 26 in terms of new business. The direction I'm taking the company is, it's different than what Dad would do. We are not an ISO 9001 certified company, but hopefully by the end of March we will be.
And what's that mean for you guys?
ISO 9001 is a international standard that dictates quality management systems. You know, basically the way you run your business and how do you follow the processes that you have and ensure that the business is in tune for risks and things like that. And there's a portion of succession planning, you know, in that standard, if you will. So for us, it means getting new business because we essentially will hold their certificate that says we have gone through the checklist of what you're looking for. You know, it's a pretty common industry certification. It's a culture shift. It's, you know, we're going to do things by the book now rather than go by the seat of our pants. And if we say we're going to do this, we're going to do this. It's a culture change. You know, Dad wasn't big on that way of going, but it's something I think is really valuable for the business, because if you implement the requirements of the certification, it'll make your business better and it'll open doors for new opportunities. So it's something we've been working on for the last probably close to a year now.
Okay. So it's more of a reliability certification, not like a tolerance or a precision kind of measurement of what you could do.
Some of it is, for the most part, yeah, it's, you know, are you doing what you say you do? And do you have ABC to make sure that your company works, you know, in this manner? You know, I'm targeting markets that and customers that I feel are really good for the business. And while I'm never going to kick a customer out of door, focusing my efforts on the ones that matter more than that, you know, I'm getting a good ROI on. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had customers over the years that we've struggled to do, you know, good business with. You know, those have kind of dropped out. I think the biggest thing that is different is I hold a extremely high standard the way that I want the business to operate. And I love what I do. And I want everyone in this business to want to come to work. You know, I understand not everyone's obsessed with what they do, but come to work doing something that you find meaningful, rewarding, that you want to be part of a team that achieves a common goal. And if you have the attitude that you're going to row the boat in the other direction, then you're better off at, you know, a different company. And it's something that I have little tolerance for. So that's definitely different too.
Where do you think that comes from? Because, I mean, you shared 3 years ago when Dad passed, you had none of the business side, the understanding of, you know, what makes this kind of company. So, I mean, where does that come from for you?
You mean in terms of the knowledge, the attitude, or?
The attitude, like what helped you to develop that different approach than Dad? Do you think it's a time, like a period of your life thing? Like, do you think he was that way when he started the company in the 70s and 80s, or?
I don't really know how he was, but for me, it's about, I think, the type of person I am, the type of person I'd want to work for, the type of business I would want to work for. And I've gotten a lot of, and I mean a lot of great resources to lean on. Local councils here that I'm a part of, peer leadership groups that I'm a part of, business owners that I know that I can pick up the phone and call when there's an issue. You know, how would you approach this problem? How would you approach this? And it's kind of just been like this giant encyclopedia in my back pocket that, while isn't really right, has a lot of different ways of going about different situations. And I feel very confident in the network that I've grown. So I think a big part of it is networking. Who do you know? And what have they been through? Don't make the same mistakes that somebody else has already made that they can tell you to not do what they did. that type of thing. I've met one of my, you know, friends and mentors, somebody, I didn't know him. He knew my dad, and he came to my dad's wake and says, "You don't know me, but I know you. You know, come by my shop next week and let's talk." And people that want to see me succeed have been really, really helpful. I think the thing that kind of glues everything together is the culture. And I think it's just, what kind of culture of a business would you want to be in? You know, no one wants to be at a business where they constantly can't stand, you know, this person or that person.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it sounds like you're shifting the culture, maybe slowly, or just focusing it, or, you know, I know in our business, I've got clients who've been clients of our firm longer than I've been alive, even much longer than I've been here. And some of those clients will still throw that, "Well, that's not the way things used to be around here." How did you go about casting a vision for that change, getting people on board, and then making the hard decisions if somebody is rowing in the wrong direction that they need to get out? How did you build support behind you for that? And I know it's probably in process still. So
it is in process, but yeah. Finding the right, as Jim Collins said in his book, finding, you know, getting the right people in the right seats on the right bus. And, you know, once I identified who's in the right seats on the right bus, it makes it pretty obvious who isn't. And I still struggle with, well, that's not the way your dad would have done it. Or, you know, 20 years ago, we used to do this. And at some point, just have to draw the line in the sand. And it took a long time for me. And sometimes I still go back on the other side of the line. But, you know, as a business owner and somebody that's trying to create a culture and a, you know, develop a business, the people that want to see you succeed, I think it's very obvious that they want to help you, and they'll be there for you to do the things that need to get done. And I think drawing the line is something that just needs to be done. You know, especially with some people that have been here a long time. I appreciate that you've been doing this for X years like this, but I want you to, you know, take the skills that you have, and I want you to do them like that. And most people have really come a long way with that type of attitude. It's appreciating the work that people have put in and valuing what they've contributed to the company, but realizing that, you know, we're here and, you know, we're going to go here and sorry, but that's where we're going. And the right people that are on, you know, the right people in the right seats, they get it.
Yeah. Did you have champions within the company? I mean, I know you had mentors and, you know, did you have anybody in the company that started to see that vision early on and then help you spread it within the company?
Oh, I think it's still ongoing. I think a leader is not somebody that's defined by their role as being at the top of the organization. You can be a leader and be at the bottom of the organization in the, you know, the org chart. And yeah, once the people identify that this is the way that, you know, we want to go, I think the attitude spreads relatively quickly. Maybe not as fast as, say, a bad attitude, but yeah, it does spread. I didn't per se have anyone that says, you know, this is the way we're going to do it because Garrett said so this way. But people that got the message, you know, whether it was me explaining it, you know, word for word, or understanding it and the actions that I took and am taking.
Okay. I'm interested in the operations of a company your size with that many employees. Where do you find yourself today in like daily, weekly operations? What's that look like?
A little bit of everywhere. I started out after Dad passed kind of what needs to get done and how are we going to do it? And I'd find myself wanting to actually do it. And my idea was, all right, I need to learn how to do all these things so that I can, you know, help the people that are doing them. And I think that's important. I think some people in my shoes don't understand that they don't have to do everything, but they have to have enough knowledge to not have, you know, the carpet split from underneath them, that type of attitude.
Yeah.
In today's day, I've done enough of the things that I think I really need to know in order to manage the other people that are doing them. And now my day-to-day is it's unique in the sense that I'm still doing some things that are, you know, that have to get done like clockwork, but I spend a large portion of my time setting the vision for the company and supporting the goals that I set for the year. Say, you know, we're going to do X, Y, or Z for the year. Okay, so the actions that I do every day, whether it's interacting with people out on the shop floor or, you know, working with somebody on a reporting system, whatever I'm doing has to support the actions that, that I have, and, you know, that I've set for myself.
Tell, I mean, I know you've had to let people go. Tell me about your approach to hiring and finding the right fit for new people. 'Cause you said you're planning on scaling up here.
Yep.
25 and 26 are going to be growth years again.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you looking for in the team?
I think the author's name is Patrick Lincioni.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The ideal team player. That's the best book for knowing who you want on your team or not. You know, the three key attributes of being hungry, humble, and smart. Those are my big three check boxes. Hungry and humble are the bigger of the two. You know, I need people that they might not know, but they're going to find out. You know, I had a basketball coach when I was younger that said, I don't want the all-star. I want the guy that can be coached. And that's how I feel. You know, I don't want the people that are going to tell me that's not my job or that's not in my job description. I want the people to say, ooh, I want to learn how to do that. How can I contribute towards the success of the company? For the people that come in here that I bring on my team, they have to have those attributes and they have to be people that understand the vision of the company, understand that this is a team approach. This is a place where people can build careers and, you know, have a satisfying career where they're not just a number. So, you know, in looking for people, that's kind of the attitude that, you know, I'll ask a bunch of technical questions on interviews as well, but, you know, they could hit home runs on the technical aspects of the interview. If they can't prove to me that they're somebody that is willing to learn develop and advance, then it's not enough for me. So that's kind of where I set the bar higher in terms of the people that I want here. I don't go with the notion of, yeah, they're really good at their job, but, you know, they're a pain to work with. I set the line very clear.
I assume then you're involved in the hiring still of all employees at this point?
Yep, for the most part. I don't get deep in the woods in terms of some of the machine operator positions we have, but anything above that, yeah, pretty involved in.
Do you have a favorite question, or how do you cut through the interview BS to find that in a candidate?
Oh, I've got a lot of good questions. I think one of them, so many good ones. I think one of the ones that I ask that brings out true colors in people is, where do most companies miss the boat? Because if somebody's going to tell me that most companies miss the boat on insert whatever I don't want here, that is going to be pretty obvious to me. And then the other thing is what motivates them. You know, I'm looking for somebody that's motivated by learning, by performing, working with people that they want to be with. You know, the answers to what motivates somebody usually finds its way into my three key attributes somewhere along the lines. If they like to learn, you know, they say they're motivated by learning things, they're hungry. They, you know, like working within a team, they're motivated by teamwork, they're humble, you know, that type of thing. A lot of it is just learning to kind of understand when people are telling you what, you know, they think you want to hear versus whether you're having a genuine, more of a conversation with somebody. You know, obviously within professional, bounds. But when it becomes so much of an interview where you could tell that they're just telling you what you want to hear, you know, I have no interest in that type of conversation.
Gotcha. Other than a culture of excellence and saying we're heading this direction, we're heading towards a higher quality or higher level of customer, how else are you building culture in your company over the past 3 years?
I think one of the things is the commitment that we make to our customers. I would like the culture within the company is something that, you know, has improved and is improving, but also the culture on the outside of the company. We've struggled to, you know, hit on-time deliveries and things like that. And I've set some pretty high expectations for anyone that's interfacing with a customer. The expectation of anyone interfacing with a customer is they're going to hear back from you today, you know, unless you're sick or something like that. You know, if you're out of the office, you have your out of the office on. But the point is, they know that they could pick up the phone and talk to somebody, and they might not get their answer today, but they're going to hear from somebody and they're going to know when they get their answer. So the way that the company is perceived from the outside world is something that's really important to me that I've been working on.
Gotcha. How are you developing leaders within the company to move up?
Identifying the people that are hungry, humble, and smart, and give them as many opportunities to succeed. You know, the beauty of being in a small business is we don't have somebody that only does one thing. We all wear a bunch of hats. Who wants to take the most hats and learn the most things? And then they will naturally lead up. I have had people that I've, you know, am grooming or have started to develop into, you know, some of the more key roles here because they're the ones that say, Garrett, I want to do this. Garrett, I want to learn. I see the way that you want to take the company. I want to help you get there. Those are the people that identify to me as the leaders of a business because, you know, they hold that same visionary type attitude. And then in terms of how I actually go about doing it, we're a team here. So if you don't know, you ask, and if you know, you find out. I've sent a lot of people to trainings, so pay for schooling, you know, whatever courses. Somebody comes up to me and say, Garrett, I want to learn about this. Can I take this class? Most of the time I say yes.
Gotcha. Awesome. Garrett, before we move on to the lightning round, is there anything else that I haven't asked yet or haven't covered that you want to add?
I think it's really important for business owners to understand that there's more to business than money. There's a real people aspect, and that's something that I enjoy. I mean, everyone running a business wants to run a profitable company, and hopefully it's for the right reasons to be able to, you know, invest in their people and make the world a better place via their contribution of their business. That's something that I think is undervalued, and quite frankly, not enough people that aren't running businesses understand that.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Sure. That's great. All right. I'll do a lightning round at the end of my episode. So are you ready to go?
Let's go.
All right. Do you prefer coffee or tea, and how do you like it prepared?
Tea, and any which way.
Hot or cold?
Both. I prefer hot.
Gotcha. Okay. Pie or cake, and do you have a favorite kind?
Cake. Molten lava cake.
Okay. All right. I mean, you just shared one for business owners, but what's a common belief among entrepreneurs that you would want to challenge?
The way teams are built, rather than just, you know, paying somebody and say, you know, go do this. Here's your job. Help them get there.
All right. Do you have a favorite holiday and why?
Thanksgiving. It's low stress, eat a bunch of good food, no presents. Everyone just, it's a good time to practice gratitude.
Awesome. Love it. Are you a morning or a night person? And do you have a favorite routine that you like?
Morning, wake up, walk upstairs to my home gym, work out, whatever kind of workout it is, sit down, do a 10-minute meditation in the morning, go downstairs, have a bowl of Greek yogurt with healthy toppings, take a nice shower, make my tea, head to work.
What's one thing that you would want your successor to remember you for?
Being a leader, providing the right people the right opportunities.
And where are you finding creativity right now in your work or for your work?
The leaders that I've met, a lot of people have a lot of great ideas, and I think AI is wonderful as long as you don't use it to replace your brain. You know, if you use it as a supplement per se, there's so much, you know, time that can be saved and things that can be done. I think we're on the verge of an explosion here in a good way.
Yeah. Are you meeting monthly or weekly with your local peer groups? What's that look like for you?
I am part of a local CEO group that meets, every other month as a group, and alternating every other month with the group leader. And I'm a part of the local manufacturing council here that will have, I'm not on the board, but they'll have board meetings that I attend quite frequently, and all sorts of different events that I'm doing at least once a month.
That local CEO group that you're in, I mean, how deep into the weeds operations of each other's businesses do you get? Do you guys get, are you like looking at financials together?
Is it sharing just super struggles? Nuts. Yeah. It's financials, it's struggles, it's challenges, it's making sure everyone is doing what they need to do to work towards their goals. So kind of holding each other accountable.
Nice. How many people in that group?
I just joined recently and we're at 7. So it's, you know, non-competing interests, people that have business problems that doesn't matter what business you're in.
Awesome. Love it. Mastermind group. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
What do you have coming up in the next year that's got you really excited?
Everything. I love what I do. There's so much fun to have, but we're bringing on some new big accounts. We're going to get our ISO certification, like I mentioned during the show. We have new people coming on board, you know, developing people, all kinds of new projects that are launching us into the 21st century in terms of technology. I could go on and on.
That ISO 9001, I think is, you said the number, right? What, how long of a process is that? And do you have to hire a consultant to audit it, or how's that?
Yeah, we hired a consultant to work with us. And I also sent my director of quality to a class to learn how to basically get our certification. Depends on the company, how far along you are. We like to say that we've always had it just without the sticker, and we had some cleanup to do. So it could take years or, you know, a couple months for somebody. There's a lot of internal audits that need to happen and external audits that need to happen to clean up the paperwork side of things. But we've been implementing new systems over the last 6 months that needed to be implemented. But it's definitely a work in progress.
So it's been under a year, though, from the time you decided to when you should finish this thing up?
Yeah, we're coming up about a year now.
Gotcha.
And we had some time lost because I was ill earlier in the year. So collectively, gotcha. Yeah.
Okay. And where can people find out more information about you, Garrett?
I'm all over LinkedIn. Reach me on LinkedIn. And there's some, you know, my brief bio on lamothermic.com. But if anyone's interested, shoot me a connection request on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your story, Garrett. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Art of Succession podcast with your host, Barrett Young. Twice a month, we'll bring you interviews sharing the successes and challenges from business owners with their own succession stories. The Art of Succession is sponsored by GWCPA and is provided for informational purposes only. Before engaging in any transaction, you should consult your own advisor. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. And we'll see you on the next one.